So we'll look at this passage now that's just been read for us and think for a few minutes about it under that overall theme, as has already been told us, is life just a game of dice? And last week's theme was a monotonous life. This week's theme, a wise life. And basically what we're looking at is Solomon the philosopher. Oh, he was king, yes, but he's also puts himself in the role of teacher here. And he's going through now, episode after episode, saying, okay, put yourself in the viewpoint of an atheist, or at least somebody who ignores God, treats God as though he is an atheist, and see how far it gets you. So he's saying, here, let's try out wisdom. A little later he'll say, let's try out wealth. Let's try out building projects. So here it's really a study course. Let's try out a study course and see how we get on without God. So, a wise life. Which bit do we look at first of all? I think we look at verse 17. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. So he looks at the opposite as well. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. Who is the wisest person that you ever met? You could think about it. You've probably got somebody in your mind. Maybe somebody quite young, maybe somebody very old. One of the wisest people I ever met in the whole of my life was a Ugandan man called Sabiti, Eric Sabiti. And he always put a little thing on the end of African names, so it was Erica Sabiti. They called him Erica Sabiti. When I first met him, my dad had said to me, Richard, would you take Erica Sabiti on a tour of London? He's never been to London before or to any great city. Just show him around. So I did. And in terms of worldly wisdom, Erica knew nothing. So I took him to the escalator. He said, what's this? I said, it's okay, just step on. I can't step on it. And eventually he got the hang of it. I took him to Madame Tussauds. He couldn't understand the waxworks a bit. That was beyond him. But why? Why they made these? Well, I said, it's to resemble people. Then eventually he got into it. Then he went up to people sitting there and thought they were waxworks. Oh, it moved, you know. So he really hadn't got any clue about it at all. Erica Sabiti, I adored him. He became Archbishop of Uganda in the end, after Janani Luwum had been shot by Idi Amin. Janani Luwum was the previous Archbishop. And then in came Erica Sabiti to guide the church with his wisdom. A wonderful man. And there was a great evangelist in Uganda called Festo Kivenjeri, and he was very worldly wise. He would go all over the world, New York, didn't matter, Tokyo, preaching his head off. But Erica Sabiti was his guru. He would come back home then to this little thatched house, right out in the country, Erica Sabiti's house, and then Festo Kivenjeri would present himself. Ah, Festo, how have you been getting on? Oh, I've been preaching in New York, I've been preaching in Buenos Aires, I've been preaching in London, England. And what did you learn in all that time? Oh, well, yeah, I learned one or two things. What? This and that, yes. And then, what did you learn about your walk with Jesus? Have you been walking with him in all of this hectic activity? Well, I think so, Erica. He would then have a debriefing session. And he chose a wise person. So, wise people, here is Solomon talking about wisdom, but it's really academic wisdom that he's talking about. So no matter how highly placed you may be, verse 12, I, the teacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. Yeah, he was King Solomon. And the style of the Hebrew that's written here comes from a slightly later period, and so the scholars are telling us, many scholars will tell us, that perhaps this is Solomon, but a little edited down later on. It's an edited version that we've got here. But it's nevertheless one of the people who has given a great deal of wisdom. Maybe he squandered it later in his life as he got morally involved with other various compromises. Nevertheless, he was wise, and certainly in terms of academic understanding and a great deal of human wisdom, he was very, very clever. But life under the sun, to use the phrase that of verse 3, which is repeated in verse 9, life under the sun is not going to satisfy. That is to say, the life where heaven is closed off, one-dimensional life, is not going to satisfy. And that's what Solomon understands from the very beginning. But he's putting himself in the position of somebody who is not really a believer in God at all, or at least who discounts God. And he's tantalizing and teasing at one and the same time. He's saying to the reader, look, if you are in that position of leaving God out, let me push you in the direction of your own logic. And let's just see how we get along. That's basically what he's doing. And the burdensome is noticed there in verse 13. Once you take that line, I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. So again, leaving out heaven, under heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. Many people have discovered that when they've been brought up in societies where God is not taken any account of. So Svetlana Stalin, Stalin's daughter, the daughter of the great dictator in the Soviet Union, said in 1967, I was brought up in a family where there was never any talk about God, but when I became a grown-up person, I found that it was impossible to exist without God in one's heart. So she had also gone along that line of being logically in the place where you're not taking any account of God, and see where it gets you. It wasn't as though Solomon, who cast himself in the role of the teacher, was badly equipped to investigate life with all its wisdom and knowledge. He was well equipped in many, many ways. And he says, a study course, look at it, see how far it gets you. And then he portrays for us this closed off heaven. All that is done under heaven, verse 13. That's the clue as to what his thinking is. He's showing us what life is like without God, and he puts himself in that position. Well, there are many people who from the start have had a view of God which is a rounded off worldview with God at the center. The greatest king this country ever had was King Alfred. He's the only monarch we've ever had who was called the Great. Alfred the Great of the 9th century. And what we learn about him was that he said once he'd beaten the Danes, and he was then very gracious to the Danes who he'd beaten, he said to King Guthrum, their leader, it's okay, let's share the country. Oh, I've beaten you, it's okay. Could have them all killed, but no, we'll share the country. And then Guthrum said, oh, I'd like to be a Christian, same as you. Okay, you can be baptized, and I'll be your godfather. And then he was very careful to make sure that not only did he advance in his worldview, but also the courtiers. He said, let's all come back to school. He put them all through school and study, and his own pattern for the day was 8 hours for sleep, meals and recreation, 8 hours for public duties, and 8 hours for reading, prayer, and study. That's 8 hours for that. That's what he thought it was needed. And he was known throughout England as the protector of the poor. And when he died, he left England unmistakably Christian. That's Alfred the Great. You know, when you look at this passage and you're looking at the way that this other king, Solomon, is presenting it, it's very clever what he's doing under the inspiration of the Spirit of God. So when you come on to verse 18, for with much wisdom comes much sorrow if you're taking this stance. The more knowledge, the more grief. Or as Moffat's translation puts it, the more you understand, the more you ache. Many people have found that. You take Derrida today, who goes into all of the explanations about deconstruction. He's the world expert on deconstruction. My son, who's a PhD in all of that area of political philosophy and English literature, tells me all about Derrida, and I said, give me a quote from Derrida. Daddy says, you don't understand. You can't quote Derrida, because everything's got to be qualified. So you haven't got any definitive statement from Derrida. I said, I don't believe it. I went to one of the bookshops, I thought, Derrida, there we are, Derrida. I thought, pull it off and have a look. I thought, Timothy's right. This man is unquotable. You can't say anything. And I thought, that's what happens if you're going to have a world view where there's nothing substantive at the center of it. A closed off heaven, that's the first thing. Secondly, an inadequate worldview, therefore. That, again, is what's being presented to us. Very frustrating. You ache with it. So verse 14, as we look here, I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Very frustrating. You try and grab it, and you can't get hold of it at all. Can't get it straight. Verse 15, you try and have a straight idea, it doesn't work. What is twisted cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. So you can't make head or tail of what's going on. I remember interviewing some people for a job once. Three candidates in a row, one after the other. And to each one, I mean, we are a panel of interviewers, but to each one I said in turn, would you just please describe for us your worldview? Worldview? This is what they all said. Worldview? Yeah, I'd say, all I mean by that is your understanding of life upon this world. Boy, that'll take a long time. Oh, I say, just in bullet points. That's all we need. Oh, they're all floundering. I thought, here are people looking for a job of great responsibility in an intellectual setting. They haven't thought out their worldview. They can't give it. Not in 30 seconds. One ought to be able to. Why not? Eddie Gibbs, who does a whole lot of lecturing and writing in sociology and so forth, he writes in one of his books, "Never has there been so much knowledge, yet such appalling stupidity." He writes that in The God Who Communicates. So really what we're learning here is that if you haven't got it sorted out, actually in the Bible's terms, you are a fool. You may understand a whole lot of things in terms of worldly wisdom, but if you haven't worked out what the whole shooting match is for and what the rationale of life is, have we learned anything? So, you know, our historic universities were originally established on the basis of a credible Christian worldview that held together. You talk to Jay Bruce afterwards over sandwiches, and he will tell you that even Harvard University, its watchword used to be truth in Christ and his church. Now they just say truth. They've lost it. Or Cambridge University, where I was. Why do we have all these colleges called Emmanuel College, Christ College, Jesus College, St. John's College, Trinity College? Because Oxford and Cambridge and these ancient universities were started with a Christian worldview as their absolute basis. That's why we don't call them multiversities. We call them universities. Because uni, one, and veritas, truth, one truth. That's the idea behind a university. Not lots of different truths, you know, your truth, his truth, her truth, you know, the lesbian gay truth, the Marxist truth. No, not at all. Your story, my story, their story. No, it says one story. So you might be doing French, or you might be, you know, languages, or you might be doing mathematics, or you might be doing science, but it's all slices of the same cake. That's the idea behind a university. Today, of course, you can do studies in, well, the career of David Beckham. You can be doing that nowadays. Or you can opt for Star Wars studies, if you want. That's the kind of world that we're into at the moment. So a closed-off heaven and an inadequate worldview. So describe your own worldview. We need to do that. We need to be able to do that. And Solomon is helping us to get to that point. I am going to get this worked out. And even if I have to be driven along the lines of my own personal inadequacy at this present time. And the third thing that I learn here, see, a closed-off heaven, an inadequate worldview, and then a never-ending quest, a never-ending search. Verse 17 again, where we started. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly, but I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. That very clever man of centuries ago, Plato, long before the time of Christ, talked about what he called the unexamined life, by which he meant a life that cannot stand up to a radical, searching examination. And he said the inadequacy of being in that position. the unexamined life. We don't want that. We want to have a life that actually stands up to a rigorous examination from outside and still holds together. When you think of Euripides, again, the ancient Greek world, we can look at his plays today. Medea, you may have seen here in London, great tragedian. But he says, as I look for the chances that fall to men and the deeds they do, it is confusion, all of it. And life passes away for men, full of wandering and change forever. Or come into our more modern world, Henry Martin, who rose to great prominence in the University of Cambridge, senior wrangler of his day, that meant he was the top, undisputed, top mathematician of his time. But his comment was, I obtained my highest wishes, but was surprised to find I had grasped a shadow. Well, he became a believer, and then he became a great Christian communicator and writer and student and missionary in the end in India. He gave his life to India. But that was his first thing. I grasped a shadow, even though I got to the top. So a closed-off heaven, an inadequate worldview, and a never-ending search. And the idea behind all of that is to push the inquirer along the line of his or her own logic. And to say, how far is it getting you, as you are? You satisfied? Credible worldview? Will it stand up? Wisdom. The real wisdom. So when you come, see, that's what the real wisdom the Bible wants to emphasize, of course. 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 19. For it is written by God, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate. So there is such a thing as real wisdom. And you may not have ever been to school. You may be illiterate and still possess this wisdom that teaches you how to get along in life, how to handle life with all its complexities, how to keep those balls in the air like a juggler with 15 balls and still have the whole thing together. We can do so when the center is right. Get the center right and the whole thing cannot be completely wrong. Get the center wrong and the whole thing falls into a meaningless jangle. It's a last quote then from Clement Attlee, former Prime Minister of Britain. He once wrote in The Observer, it is a curious thing that nearly every cabinet throws up at least one member, whether a departmental minister or not, of whom a newcomer might ask, what's he doing here? And Clement Attlee's answer is, he is there because he is wise. We take that to heart as we pursue this little study course in Ecclesiastes. Let's close off with a prayer. Teach us then, Lord, this wisdom. We cannot get there on our own. We rely upon a wisdom that is from above, revealed to us in this your holy word. Help us to grasp it and then to live it. For Christ's sake. Amen.